guess I'll push it out to the guys in the groups over there and all that fun stuff as we get going here. If anybody's already out there listening, thank you guys very much for showing up. We're going to have a fun night. There's the three of us tonight. We're going to be minus Alex Stanzik and that other guy that sometimes shows up on the show, Jordan.
for being like the only guy that is intentionally not working. He has to miss a lot of shows, which, I mean, I'm not talking shit. Like, he has a family and everything, so I can't knock him for that.
Well, you know, when you're the trophy husband that, you know, stay at home husband, and you got made, yeah, you support the wife, right?
Like, you that's have how priorities.
It, yeah, priorities. That's the word for it, man.
You better fucking keep her happy, man.
Yeah,
I gotta give him smoke where I can, though. So that's probably the only place where I can't give him smoke.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I mean, having met Jordan in person, guys, and seen like exactly, you know, how squared away he is, and you know, most of the time, minus his I think it was, I don't know, Saturday morning wake up before or Friday morning wake up when we were supposed to go out for a good hike, and
never let him live that down.
Oh no, it's like, hey man, this clock will step off from here. That'll give us plenty of time to get down to the airport, get about 4 miles in with the dogs, wear those guys out. And man, 6 o'clock came around, and I was just like, that guy,
just kidding,
he's not getting up, man. He is late to PT. That's the one time I've ever told an officer what time to be somewhere for formation, and they fucking failed.
Ooh. Ooh,
naturally,
shots fired.
No, but he's actually squared away. Hey, the guys in the Twitter spaces out there, thanks for being here. You guys, if you want, we're gonna have as much interaction as possible tonight from the Twitter spaces group. So if you want to share this, send it around to your groups and get everybody in here, that'd be awesome. We're trying to spread this Bitcoin veterans message to as many veterans and anybody else who will listen to us as possible, to get those guys on the mission. Everybody, I guess we got Nick out there on YouTube already. What's up, Nick? Nick's done a lot of work, man. Was Nick the...
Nick's a busy dude.
I mean, Jesus. We were talking about petting sharks the other night. He's been known to be underwater quite a bit with his, I don't know, let's just say his former military profession. And, you know, it's like, man, having been one of those guys that spends an absorbent amount of time in the water with big chompies, you know, like, that is not a place I ever felt real comfortable. And Nick's like, oh, yeah, if you pet them, they're just fine.
Just like, they're like dogs at that point. As long as you pet them, like, you pay the dues, then you're good, right?
Only a Navy diver, right?
Yeah. I mean, the way I see it, it only takes once, man.
Yeah,
it only takes once. But I tell you, that dude is putting in some work, though. He's been building out the Operation Bitcoin website, and I mean, he's killing it. He's killing it. I mean, I can't wait to show it to you guys. I think you're gonna dig it. But the man he's got a gift. So you know, and he built the Bitcoin Veterans website too. But dude is awesome, man. He's killing it.
He has done a great job with what he's done with that website too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you guys don't know about it, it is bitcoinveterans.org, not .com. Those are some other guys, you know, doing their own thing over there, that I think pretty good guys as well. We should probably actually reach out and contact them and see why they're trying to rip off our name.
I was about to say, like, deploy some mafia tactics, be like, hey, what are you guys doing? Why are you guys trying to like steal our name here?
Gang wars, man. That's what we're gonna have dark orange and light orange teams.
Nothing wrong with that. No. As long as they're spreading the mission, you know.
Yep.
Golly, I know, man. This this week's been kind of nuts. We'll get into that, I guess, a little bit later. But the mission does definitely seem to be spreading a little bit, man. I mean, it's kind of caught on. What do you got there, Gabe? Look at your,
yeah. It's been wild, man. Just I keep running into people and having more conversations about things that different veterans are doing, man, just out in the space. And it's astonishing. But again, it's just not, you know, I'm not surprised, you know, because I mean, that's just what we do, you know, show up and start getting things done. So, yeah, starting to hear more about, you know, people that are doing things to create career opportunities for veterans in the Bitcoin space, which is, you know, freaking awesome. And yeah, I'm feeling pretty optimistic about that whole thing right now.
I tell you what, like our group chat continues to just inspire me. A, because of the amount of activity that's going on in there. Like those guys, like you guys that are in the group chat, like you don't stop. Like it is impossible for at least for me, and I'm sure it's true for the rest of you guys. It is impossible to keep up with what's being talked about in there. And I feel bad for like dropping, like when I want to drop in like updates that I see on like Twitter or like articles like Preston Pish's article that we were just talking about, like I'm interrupting conversation, but I'm like, there's no break in this conversation. Like you guys keep the conversation going 24/7. So like, I apologize, but I'm going to interrupt when I think there's something worth looking at.
Should we make a pre-show announcement for all the guys that are here early? I mean, pays to be a winner, right? Yeah. On November 8th, we have the one and only Preston Pish joining the show, and hats off to Mike for making that happen.
I'm excited for that one.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
nice work, man.
I'm very excited to have Preston on. He's obviously he's a veteran, and you know, he's got a tremendous amount of knowledge in the space. Which, you know, when I started following Preston a long time ago, I thought he had come from the financial field. Honestly, I had no idea that he was a veteran. So, you know, to have that high of acumen in the space and to have done what he has in the Army, man, what a that guy's got a 12-pound brain.
When I specifically remember the phone call with you, Shane, I believe it was probably like 2 years ago, and I'm pretty sure it was early in the morning talking about Preston Pish because I was at the gym at the time. Like I was getting ready to go work out, and you were like, "Oh, dude, I had no idea that Preston was a vet." I'm like, "Oh yeah, dude, like he's got quite the background."
Yeah, I think you actually told that to me out here on the mountain the first time you came out.
Maybe, probably. Yeah. I don't know. Like it's impossible to keep all these like stories straight anymore. Like it was definitely either the mountain or the phone call or potentially both. We might have forgotten about the phone call and then talked about it on the mountain. That's a very possible.
That's very possible. Especially given my state last year. Oh man. I got to tell you guys, I tweaked my back pretty bad on Monday night, man. And I've got some painkillers going, to say the least, on this show. So getting everything squared away today, getting taking care of work and everything else. And now, you know, kind of getting to relax a little, having an extra muscle relaxer and, you know, a little bit of nerve pain agent to take care of this thing is. Oh boy,
guys, Turkish get-ups are pretty taxing of a workout to begin with. So if you're gonna get like pretty gung-ho and start throwing around 55s while you're doing it, maybe slow down a little bit.
I've got a couple of sets of dumbbells in my office here in the studio, and I get up at the bottom of every hour, and I do stuff, right? I mean, that's just the way I am. I'm like, if I'm going to have a damn desk job, I got to get up and I got to go do stuff and get that heart pumping. And I've been going after it pretty hard lately and just, you know, feeling good again. It's been a year since, I started, you know, getting out and moving, and I felt great. It felt strong. And I was like, all right, this is the test, right? It's like, I could do this. I could do this with the 20s, which I usually use for like shoulder movements and all that fun stuff. Or I could stop being a bitch and grab a 55 and do, you know, 5 Turkish get ups per side. And I did them. I mean, it was, I felt great. I felt strong during it. And then later in the evening, man, boy, my lower back and whatever is connected down there just said,
"You're well, that's the thing about those. That's the thing about those dynamic compound movements, especially when you're doing like with the Turkish get up. For those that don't know what it is, I would recommend Googling it right now if you can, just to understand, because like there's a lot of, it's not just balance and stability, but there's a lot of shifting of body weight between left and right in order to get up, and also maintaining the balance and stability of the weight that you're holding over your head from the ground up to like the standing position if you're doing the full get up. And it's just like when you're involving that many systems, like all it takes is just one iteration or one repetition of just one slightly out of position form. It's just
one slippery disc. maybe not today.
Yeah. You thought you were gonna, but you're not.
Oh man, it was it was bad, man. I mean, the first night I was just like, this is not great. But it because of everything that happened last year, I think there's less disc pressing on nerves and all that fun stuff. So I think it's going to heal quite a bit faster, and I'll probably be back to normal by hopefully after the weekend. But yeah, those were rough.
That's where the stretching and the protein will help with that. Which you guys have plenty of access to protein with all those chickens. I can tell you that.
Dude, you know what's really crazy is right now they're molting, so they're not laying tons of eggs. We're getting like, I mean, I've got 38 chickens, and we're probably getting like 5-6 eggs a day right now. And
slacking.
I'm telling you what, those bare ass bitches, they need to get to work.
good thing I didn't demand that I get the 6 eggs with the breakfast that you guys were fixing for us when we were up on the mountain. Would have put you guys into a deficit.
we had some in store, so it's all good. Yeah, you know, and maybe for anybody that's out there and you don't know this, like if you're thinking about having chickens and you're like, oh, I can't eat all those eggs. Well, here's the thing is eggs that are fresh out of chickens, they have this thing called a bloom on them. And that bloom keeps them safe at room temperature on your counter for about a month. And
what? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's actually pretty cool. There's other things you can do to preserve eggs, but that's what I recommend for sure is just, you know, have a few chickens, especially in this day and age when things aren't, you know, real certain. If you can't take care of chickens, well, boy, better luck to you when this thing comes unglued.
Well, there's one of those. That's the gift that keeps on giving too, man, because, you know, if they just stop making eggs, you can just go ahead and eat the egg maker. You know? I mean, especially if all they're going to be doing is just streaking around the yard, losing feathers and not producing, man, it might be time to make some chicken tenders, my friend.
That's right.
Chicken tenders are good.
Make an example. Do it in front of the rest of them too, you know, let them see it happen.
Do you use the whole chicken, the feet and the cartilage and all that for your chicken tenders? Cause if not, man, like you're missing out.
Yeah, those are delicacies, man. You gotta fry those up and nibble on them just as they are.
You guys ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's kick it. Welcome to Bitcoin Veterans. The bull market is back. We are Bitcoiners. We're veterans. It's self-explanatory. Welcome to all that are here. We appreciate you being here. Everybody on Twitter Spaces tonight, man, is your night. If you want to weigh in on what we're talking about, just request to come up and we'll bring you up. We're short two veterans tonight on the panel. Alex is dealing with some family issues, and Jordan is off being a trophy husband, and we're all fucking jealous, I guess. But what's new? I am still joined tonight by the great Gabe and Mike Hobart. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you guys for being dependable. Being
about dependable. It's just that I think we all enjoy being here is the thing.
Yeah, we've got a lot to talk about tonight. And first and foremost, if you love this show, go out, smash the like button on whatever platform you're listening to. Follow on Twitter, follow us on YouTube, hit the like button, hit that little notification button, and you'll get notified when we do this. And maybe share it with a battle buddy, share it with a friend, whatever you call your buddies out there that you're drinking with, or smoking with, or doing psychedelics on a mountain with, you know, whatever it is. Yeah. But go out and do all and let everybody know that this space here for Bitcoin veterans is something special. And it's one of those things where I got reminded in the, I think it was PB, maybe Gabe, I think you may have been standing with me, is like, you know, there was a couple of guys that came up to us and said, you know, when you guys first launched, you guys made this claim to be a group that was tapping into that warrior spirit that I think a lot of guys had, not only here in America, but, you know, around the world, that wanted to do something bigger than themselves and to serve a greater cause, and that love their fellow human beings to the extent where they laid down their life for them. And that's what Bitcoin and this Bitcoin Veterans Group is all about. It's about getting the guys that had all that, that kind of saw through the cracks and behind the curtain of the evil MIC, and have, you know, maybe turned a little bit of nihilism, to bring those guys back, to give them some hope, to give them a new mission, to start spreading this idea of independence and liberty and freedom and everything that we were told America was. So the American idea is strong. It is, I think, coded into the white paper of Bitcoin and the positive incentive structure. And we're here for it, man. This is your group. It's doing amazing things out there. You know, Gabe's got some Skillshare programs going. We've got post-traumatic stress going. We've got guys doing Citadel work. We've got production and so much more. So if you're into this and you want to get connected, you can email us. You can get in hold of us on Twitter, and we'll plug you into this amazing Bitcoin veterans group that it never sleeps.
That's putting it mildly.
Mm-hmm.
At least we were talking about it in the pre-show. The group chat is probably like the best. Just like I can't give those guys enough support, enough like call out as far as like on these episodes. It's like I'm pretty sure the majority of the group just doesn't sleep. Like everybody's just talking about, not just because like I think my favorite part is that the conversations that are happening in there aren't just, it's not just like a bunch of just like Bitcoin spouting being regurgitated back into each other's mouths. It's everything talking about like politics, banking, finance, economics, military action. Like it's everything that every soldier should be aware of and be cognizant of. But like we've talked about many times, and we will continue to talk about many times in the future, is that like there's not enough of that quality kind of education and conversation that happens within the armed forces itself. Like it's just, the military has been turned into its own kind of like 9-to-5 job.
Yeah. I got a comment here from McLovin. Mike is making nerdism cool again. Thank you for that, Mike. He's got the praying hands. Hey, you know what the thing is? It's like, dude, Bitcoin is full of nerds, and they are some of the hardest working, brightest nerds I've ever met. And, you know, and here's the other thing is they got a lot of fucking fight in them too. Like this group of nerds, man, they're not fucking around. I mean, you know, the fact that, you know, you had some nerds, which, you know, they called themselves cypherpunks back in 2008, get together and push this white paper out that actually took the idea of a digital cash system and brought it to fruition, and it hasn't forked since. You know, maybe some soft forks, don't get me wrong, but like hasn't forked since, and has got it to the point now where they're building layer on top of layer. And now that we're entering a bull market, you know, these guys are not only coming up with brand new ideas and brand new tech and brand new practical application, like these guys are getting paid to do this now. There is so much reinvestment into this place. So yeah, hey, thanks to all the nerds, man, and everybody who's out there that are engineering our way out of this, that are coding our way out of this, I don't know, totalitarian, you know, nightmare of a state that they want in terms of CBDCs and total control. Like, fuck yeah, thank you, nerds. We really appreciate the shit out of you. And there's plenty in this group to go around.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Yeah, and think about what happens when you get nerds like that are also trained warriors. I think it's a pretty fantastic combination. Let's go. And, you know, and also just to build on that, I mean, the conversations that are taking place within that group, you know, I mean, I'll step away for a few hours and I'll hop in, and there's, you know, billions of comments in there. And I mean, sometimes you step into some of the weirdest stuff that's going on, but at the same time, all you got to do is look at it, and you can see that these guys, you know, they're growing from their interactions with one another, and they're talking about solutions to problems, and they're supporting one another in their journeys. And, you know, and you know, they'll ask questions that it's like, you know, they might, you know, in other situations might be kind of, you know, scared or embarrassed to ask these questions, but they're throwing it out there. And I mean, yeah, they might get a little bit of shit for it, but in the end, they're going to look out for each other, because, you know, everybody's in different places in their education when it comes to Bitcoin, and we're all going in the same direction. But it's an awesome group, and it's taken on a life of its own. And it's like I said in the beginning, we've got multiple projects that are just, you know, coming to life. And it's, you know, this is not, you know, it's truly decentralized. You know, there is no, you know, driving, you know, entity that says, okay, guys, here's what you're going to do. They're just doing it, and they're making it happen. And anybody who wants to get plugged in, they can get plugged in. So it kicks ass, man. It's definitely something unique. I'm happy to be a part of it, and we just continue to grow, man. It's just the coolest damn thing.
Well, and just one more thing to add to Peaceful Seas nerd count for the episode. When you think about it, it's actually pretty hilarious and nonsensical that society in general has kind of like ostracized or alienated, like just like the nerd class, I guess you could call them, throughout all of society's history, like going all the way back like thousands of years. Like, nerds are the ones that pull the future forward. But then, because they're doing something that is deemed to be different, everyone finds them weird. And it's just like, what are you doing? Like, that's a good identifier of somebody who's not capable of actually thinking, or at least original thought and critical thinking. Because, like, I can guarantee you, if at the time when things were happening, Galileo was a nerd, was ostracized for his thinking, Copernicus, Einstein, like, just go down the list of all the greatest thinkers throughout history, and like the ones that brought forth particularly revolutionary thought, like, I can guarantee Hal Finney was not a super popular dude at the time. Like, it's, and maybe he was within his circles, but like, nobody really knew of him until like this whole Bitcoin thing started to take off. And then everyone's like, holy crap, he was a smart cookie and a cool dude for like helping build what he did. But the unfortunate thing is that I think that some of the greatest nerds that are working on things today won't be fully appreciated for decades to come. And now that doesn't necessarily, like, I kind of worded it like it was a negative, but it's really more of just like kind of like bringing to light. It's like, guys, like, we won't be appreciated in the now for what we're doing right now. We're going to be appreciated in years and decades to come. Like, that's the whole point to everything that we're trying to put together here.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. At least this time there used to be this book, and I think I may have it on one of these shelves behind me. To the myths go to the victors go the myths and the monuments. And I think that's probably a result of a fiat structure to begin with. I am actually very hopeful that this time around, as Bitcoin becomes the emergent, not only technology, but the emergent settlement system, that when it aligns with the incentive structure that is Bitcoin, that we're the ones that are going to get to write those myths and build those monuments. And, you know, the thing is because of the incentive structure, you're not going to be doing this in a perverse way. You know, there's going to have to be value added. There's going to have to be a lot of truth behind it. There's just, you know, to have this, you know, to be recognized, I think a lot like, you know, what I would say the anti-federalists were back in, you know, the late 1700s, like nobody reads those guys. Even today, it's hard to find. You know, people talk about the Federalists, but nobody talks about the anti-Federalists, who I think were the real heroes. And those guys predicted everything that came down the pipe from now until then in this tyrannical state. And I think they'd probably look at this and go, oh boy, you guys haven't picked up your muskets yet, and you're still being peaceful. You got a lot more patience, or I don't know, patience or stupidity than us. But yeah, this is an incredible crowd. And, you know, maybe to remind everybody too is, you know, in 2008, the country was melting down. And I know there's some people, you know, that there's a lot of young people in Bitcoin. The response to that was what Hal Finney and, you know, what we think Hal Finney and some of the guys behind Bitcoin, that's why they stood up and they put this together. They put Bitcoin together because they said, never again in history are they going to be able to rob me of my wealth. And we need to create a system so that nobody can be robbed of their wealth by these people in DC, by the banks, by the aristocratic class. Like, this has to stop. And I think that's, you know, if more people understood that was the motivation behind Bitcoin, they'd be much quicker to give it a second look.
Yeah. No. Go ahead, Gabe.
I was just going to say, you mentioned something earlier. And I'm just going to revisit Galileo, Newton, all these guys, you know, that changed the world. You know, it just goes back to that thing of, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, and then you win. And, you know, that's something that I've tried to, you know, teach my kids, you know, raising them up is, you know, when somebody's being made fun of, you have to wonder why, you know, what's really going on with this? Because those are the people that are doing something, because, you know, people tend to mock and belittle things that they don't understand, because oftentimes it's something they just can't keep up with and they don't get it. But, you know, look into those situations deeper, because, that's just the case right now, you know, because for years, you know, it's Bitcoin is this, you know, it's garbage, you know, you're going to do this. And we see it. And we're continuing to go through that cycle. But it's the ones that get ignored, and then the ones that get laughed at, who eventually, you know, it is the value of what they're doing is seen. Usually by that time that it's recognized, they've already set it in motion, which is a good thing. And then everybody wants to jump on that bad bandwagon afterward, and that's when you get mass adoption.
Boy, speaking of, what a great segue. Thanks for teeing that up, Gabe. Ladies and gents, I don't know if you've been under a rock, probably not around this group, especially given the amount of volume in the Bitcoin Veterans text and backstage. Again, if you want to be a part of that, you can DM us and we'll get you set up in there. Bitcoin is currently worth $34,485.47 of the cuck bucks. Here in America, the block height is 813,831. Hash rate is 433 exahash. The mempool is at 42,077. And the fastest fee rate right now is 21 sats for VBite. And over there, where my eyes are having a very hard time adjusting because of this muscle relaxer, days till the halving, 181. We are getting so close. That's less than 6 months away.
That's crazy.
What
it's gonna? It's like it's gonna. It's which, gonna be. I think. Part? I think. I. Oh, I think I'm most excited to find out how Bitcoin the asset performs with the halving, depending on where the world is when we get there, because I've talked about it in spaces ad nauseum. I think we've all talked about it multiple times. We are in a macroeconomic and US centric political environment that Bitcoin has never experienced before. So I'm excited just to see what happens. Like, I have no idea which way it could go, because like I've talked about it multiple times where I could see a scenario where things happen with the economy and things go down and Bitcoin gets dragged down with it. I could see things happening in the economy where things go down and people start to get their eyes opened as far as like this BlackRock ETF stuff or all the ETF stuff. And they start to realize that, like, unfortunately, I'm going to quote Larry Fink, they start to realize that like Bitcoin really is a flight to quality and a flight to safety, to the point of where everything goes down except for Bitcoin. There's scenarios to suggest where everything just keeps going up because it's a fiat economy and it's a scam, and Bitcoin just like takes advantage of that liquidity and continues to go up with it. There's always that. Anybody who claims to know how Bitcoin is going to truly act when we get to the halving point is LARPing. we are in a situation that is like, it is impossible to try and forecast what's going to happen next.
Yeah, this is brand new territory for the human species, and that's why I always get a good kick out of macro. I don't, get me wrong, like I listen to a lot of people who talk about macro stuff, but at the end of the day, it's prognostication. This is uncharted ground. We have no idea. None of us have ever been through the fall of an empire, which I think, you know, we are literally living through now. A stock market crash, a currency that has been blown up and has unfunded liabilities to the tune of almost $200 trillion. a U.S. military, you know, industrial complex that is trying to launch two different wars, possibly three different wars on three different fronts all at the same time. And, you know, the idea that anybody's going to sit here and tell you that they absolutely 100% know where this thing is going to be at what time and at what price, it's absolutely fiction. However, we have entered a, you know, what I think is probably the beginning of a bull market. And some of the telltale signs, you know, for me is like, I was looking at what was going on with the guys over at Binance, and Binance has kind of had this slow bleed for a long time that's kind of mimicked FTX. And if you know, you guys have been keeping up with the FTX trial, they admitted dampening the release of their Bitcoin so that it could kind of squish the price. They were trying to keep it down, but below 20,000. And to, you know, with the ETF coming on board, I was thinking, you know what, maybe they're possibly doing the same thing with Binance until they finally get to that point where they have to flip the switch. And it looks like, you know, if you look at the charts for Binance right now, as this thing is creeping lower and lower and lower, that they're running out of time, they're running out of money, running out of Bitcoin to suppress this. And that would absolutely lead to where we're at now with this, I don't know, 34,000, almost 500 in terms of,
well, the cuck cards. And Shane, that it's also important for people to think about that. So like when we look at like the fiat economic system in general, when we're talking about like avenues, taking strategies and approach and utilizing avenues to avoid like falling prey to the currency debasement of the fiat system, that's where we're running into these issues of all these different asset classes and just collectibles and all these other things like going up in value because liquidity is sloshing around trying to find a home to where it can defend itself against like the currency debasement and the inflation rate. It's also important to understand that what Binance has been doing has been literally copying that strategy of by allowing for these shit coins to go onto the market and entice people away from their Bitcoin. It is preventing capital from specifically flooding into Bitcoin. It's acting as overflow buckets to the point of where it takes away that economic power from specifically flooding into Bitcoin and the price going up. So like that's, and this is one of my contrarian takes where like, I like people are coming out and hating Gary Gensler, but I honestly think that like part of the silver lining of the SEC keeping all these spot Bitcoin ETFs from going live is giving more time for the DOJ and these other participants to like dig into Binance and be like, hey, no, like those guys are a bunch of shitsters and they're literally causing havoc and they need to be brought down so that so that these crypto shit coins aren't around anymore to like scam people away from their money and their Bitcoin. But then if those projects aren't brought down, if these crap casino exchanges like Binance that are just they're literally, I don't want to reiterate the Safe Dean quote, but they're, so each one of these crypto companies and these crypto projects are weeds in their own right, but the exchanges like Binance and Coinbase, they're acting as like super fertilizers for these weeds because people go to these exchanges to be able to disperse all of their Bitcoin and their funds into them and gain exposure to them, which also, as we know, increases their exposure to losing all of their money and their Bitcoin. So if you take down those exchanges, then you take away the massive fuel that's turning the napalm bomb into a nuclear explosion. And by doing that, let me digress a little bit, because like the point being is that if the spot Bitcoin ETF were to have gone live like 2 years ago, how much money do you think of average innocent individuals would have been lost by flowing into these crypto projects that would be riding the coattails of Bitcoin ascending to heaven and then all of a sudden just getting rugged when like Link hits like $100 per or something like that? It's like, oh, that Link hits all time high. And then the team's just like, oh, rugged. dude, all that money's gone.
I have thought exactly along the same premise, is, and I think you make a very astute point, is, you know, somebody said the other day, and I can't attribute it, like, if this was happening all at once, it would wipe out economies across the world, right? Like, you would have a really bad situation where a lot of things descend into war, and people, you know, even at the micro level, stealing from their neighbors because they can't, you know, get supplies. Nobody's running trucks anymore. Shipping isn't running. Nobody's doing anything because nobody knows how to trade with each other. And if, you know, all of that debt gets, you know, basically wiped out at one time, and everybody's, you know, savings, or quote unquote savings, which is still debt, gets wiped out, then there's another thing that happens there. That's revolution. And I think, you know, in history, and I think maybe, I hope the bankers are smart enough to understand that, you know, when you,
it's a big hope.
Yeah. When you wipe out a global economy, and you wipe out, you know, especially the people here in America that are better armed than everybody else, if you wipe out their Social Security, their Medicare, their Medicaid, everything that you ever told them that they were going to have, you take from them anything and everything that is basically of value to them, and now they're left with a lot of times because they don't have a job. They're trying to make ends meet. Like, you're talking about full scale revolution by those people, and I think the bankers know that. And so this is, I think you're right. Like, this is the release valve. It's been dialed down a little bit. It's been slowed down. Instead of having the nuclear bomb, you've got, you know, this you know, the valve for Bitcoin that has slowly turned on, and as they allow the ETFs to get approved at that point, at least there's quote unquote the appearance of, you know, people's savings going into an area of quality, like Larry Fink said. And yeah, I've thought that for a long time. I do, however, think, you know, maybe a little more conspiracy minded, that these guys are all in on it together. You know, the CZ from Binance, the guys from FTX, Gary Gensler, the congressman, well, maybe not. They're just, you know, useful idiots at this point. But all of these guys, I think, are in on it together and trying to, you know, really craft this slow unwinding of this giant debt, you know, bubble and spiral that we're in.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that there certainly is a controlled demolition that is taking place. And, you know, I'm not going to presume to know exactly who the players are, but it's evident, it's obvious, the direction that things are going in. And it's, you know, it's just a matter of, there you go, it's just a matter of how they're going to handle it and who can profit from it the most. Because it's in the cards, it's happening, you know, that egg has been dropped and it's going to hit the ground, and it's going to do what eggs do when they hit the ground. And it's interesting because, you know, you see the different responses that are being at least reported to us out in the world, you know, what FinCEN is doing, you know, the FUD that keeps coming out, the actions that they're taking, more and more talk about CBDCs, and it's further evidence. But even at the same time, I mean, obviously they control the flow of information that gets reported out to people, and they know what's heck of what they're doing. They know why they're doing it and releasing what they release when they do, because they want to spark action and they want certain people to do certain things. And they're not doing it. And I'll say it again, anything that they're doing, they're not doing for us. Anything that they're doing for them, and they're doing to increase their power. And it's that simple. You know, first of all, they're trying to hold on to the power that they've got, but then also to increase the power that they have. And, you know, when it gets to the point where the DOD is smart enough to recognize the value in something like soft war from Jason Lowry, then you know that they're catching on, because they're the last ones that are going to acknowledge that type of thing. And they shut them down for a reason. And maybe that's my own conspiracy, but they shut him down for a reason, because they know that he's right. And so when they're onto it, then we know that the other entities, especially the three letter entities, they've got a plan. and they're not just sitting back waiting for things to happen. They have a plan, and their plan will always be the same that it always has been, and that is to have more power and more control over us.
Well, and Gabe, to that point, I would also plant my flag in the belief that I think that significant portions of military leadership, all the way up to SecDef and like Secretary of the Army and all of them, I believe that those guys truly don't understand economics to the point of where they believe the U.S. dollar is America. And it's like, you guys are not actually reading the cards as like, you're not looking at the game board accurately. Like, the U.S. dollar is not America. And the way that the U.S. dollar monetary system and printer has been utilized for the last 20 to 30 years in particular has been used in a very non-American manner. So defending, I know I've said it on here before, I'm going to say it again. Like, defending the U.S. dollar right now is patently un-American. Because you can't claim to be for America when you're hollowing out the middle and lower class. Like, you can't, because that's the majority of America.
Or putting your troops in harm's way over
monetary
and over and over for the past 20 fucking years, right? Like, that's the thing is, like, you know, you're doing this for a buck, and you know, you're right on, Mike, is not only do they not understand economics, they don't have any other theory than Keynesian theory. And you know, when you understand that, you probably can make the connection that most of them haven't understood or read the Constitution that they swore an oath to either. But for a lot of these general officers who have been in, you know, 30 plus years, you know, they've been to all sorts of schools, all sorts of training, staff college, and everything else, where, you know, they've had their heads filled with this bullshit, and a lot of them are looking at climbing the ladder politically. So they become yes men, are they un-American? Of course they're un-American. Are they economically illiterate? Yep. Are they constitutionally illiterate? Yep. Are they politicians with, you know, shiny brass on? Absolutely. And so to think that, you know, military politicians that don't know shit about economics or the Constitution, that are willing to sacrifice they're the weakest, and I mean, like, quote unquote, the weakest in terms of the least of rank among them. You want to talk about an evil organization. I mean, like, as evil as the day is long, these guys are at some point going to be held to account. And man, I don't feel for them. I don't feel for them, because for the last 20 years, and you know, not only that, those 20 years, those guys that were at the tail end of that 20 years, the guys that were retiring, the guys that ran in after 9/11 to go and quote unquote fight for America, that they said, you're going to get this shot or you're done kind of deal. And maybe a dishonorable discharge. Like, they're the one biggest thing that they told us as kids that I definitely have, you know, a lot of anger over to this day, is the idea of justice in America. And when you look at, you know, the show trials, the mock trials that they have in DC for all of these assholes, like, it is just mock trial after mock trial after mock trial. You can lie, you can steal, you can murder hundreds of thousands, if not a million people, and nothing ever, ever, ever happens to anybody up there. And that's, I think that's the day that I am just, I don't know. I yearn for the day when there's some justice in America again.
Well, and like, we can, if you guys want, we can use that to segue into one of the topics I mentioned bringing up with regards to the most recent election of the new Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, Representative Mike Johnson. So the first thing I saw about him on Twitter, because I have no idea who he was, and from what I've seen, most of the internet had no idea who Mike Johnson was before this. He had a pretty decent video of grilling the CSU. I think he was the director of DHS, and like, talking about CSU. Now, if you're going to go ahead and play this, It's also like, I maybe, you know what, play it if you want, and then I will give an elaboration on something I listened to as a, as far as a speech that he gave today after, immediately after getting elected.
Yeah, this is about 5 minutes long. I'm going to let it rip because this actually is a really good conversation. You know, we'll obviously have some comments, but this is, I think this is a big piece of what we're talking about. So let's just have a listen. Take about 5 minutes and we'll come back.
I'm from Louisiana. Secretary Mayorkas, we have the frustrating responsibility on this committee of providing oversight of your agency, but I have to be honest and tell you, I'm not sure exactly what you do at the Department of Homeland Security other than great harm. On your watch, the data is pretty clear. We've had record levels of illegal immigration, a rapid decline in deportations, skyrocketing fentanyl deaths across our country, and the Secret Service, which is a DHS component, can't determine who left cocaine at the White House. In the middle of all this, you created this cybersecurity and infrastructure.
Hey, Shane, can you bring that video back? When you hit full screen, it took it away.
Of DHS.
Oh, man.
And it's one of the Biden administration agencies that...
You guys can hear it though, right?
Yeah, we can hear it. I just wanted to be able to watch the video because the guy looks like a complete idiot when he's drilling him.
It's great. Sorry, guys. Boy, I definitely messed that part of it up, didn't I?
Yeah.
He was just getting rolling too.
Yeah.
Here we go. All right, here we go. Back at it.
Colluded with and coerced the social media companies to censor Americans' protected free speech online. That's specifically detailed in a 155-page court opinion. It came out of the federal court in Louisiana in the landmark litigation of Missouri v. Biden. Have you read that court opinion?
Congressman, I have not. And the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency does not censor speech.
Okay, well, that's the court found otherwise. And it's really curious to me. Actually, it's quite alarming that you haven't read the opinion because your agency is listed in this opinion. The federal court looked at volumes of evidence over months of litigation, and they determined, among other things, that if the allegations made by the plaintiffs, the states in this case are true, and hold on, the preliminary injunction was granted against your agency, sir, and other Biden administration agencies, including the DOJ and FBI, the court said it involves the most massive attack against free speech in United States history. And you're telling me this opinion issued July 4th has not reached your desk? No one's briefed you on it?
Oh, I have been briefed on the Missouri litigation.
Okay, but you haven't taken the time to read it yet.
Congressman.
No, hold on. Have you read it or not?
I have read parts of it, Congressman.
Oh, parts of it. Did you read the parts where it said that this is Orwellian and dystopian and that your agency is involved in a massive cover-up of specifically conservatives' free speech online?
Congressman, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency is not involved in such conduct.
Okay. Well, the court found otherwise, and you stand here under oath and you give us these answers that we know were not true because this is demonstrably untrue. I'm suggesting to you that you're saying things to us under oath that are proven by the record to be untrue. Let me ask you about this specifically. CISA was created to, we call it the Misinformation and Disinformation Subcommittee of CISA. Are you familiar with that?
Congressman.
MDM, the MDM Subcommittee? You familiar with that?
Congressman, I am very well aware of the threat of disinformation emanating from adverse nations.
Are you familiar with the subcommittee? Just answer the question.
I am.
Okay. Does it still exist?
Congressman, are you speaking of the...
Does the MDM Subcommittee still exist?
I would have to get back to you on that.
Okay. All right. Kind of a big deal in your agency. I'm kind of shocked that you don't know the answer to that. Can you define what misinformation is?
Congressman, misinformation is false information that is disseminated to...
Excellent. Who determines what is false?
Congressman, our focus...
No, who determines what is false in your agency? Congressman, if you're going to pull something off the internet and collude with a social media platform to make sure Americans don't see it, who determines what's false?
Congressman, we don't do that.
That's not true. That is not true. That is not what the court has found. This is not a Republican talking point. This is what the documents show. We've had people testify under oath that say, and you just defined the term, you're telling me that you don't know who determines what is false?
Congressman, what we do at CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, is identify the tactics that adverse nation states use to weaponize disinformation.
Okay, what is disinformation? What is disinformation?
Disinformation is inaccurate information.
Who determines what's inaccurate? Who determines what's false? Do you understand the problem here? The reason the framers of our Constitution did not create an exception for quote unquote false information from the First Amendment is because they didn't trust the government to determine what it is. And you have whole committees of people in your agency trying to determine what they define as false or misinformation.
That is not true.
Well, then what is true?
What we
Please
do
enlighten us.
Is what we do is we disclose the tactics that adverse nation states are utilizing to weaponize
information. No, sir. The court found specifically, it's a finding of fact that is not disputed by the government defendants, the Biden administration, your agency, the FBI, or DHS, not in the litigation. They determined you and all of your cohorts made no distinction between domestic speech and foreign speech. So don't stand there and tell me under oath that you only focused on adversaries around the world, foreign actors. That's not true.
Congressman, the Missouri case, the litigation to which you refer, is the subject of continuing litigation.
But the facts were not disputed, and I so, so regret that I'm out of time. I hope I get some more yielded. I yield back.
That was, I don't know, out of the box, man, that's a good grilling, right?
Now, before all of us go cheering for him, because that was the first thing I wanted to do after seeing that video. The speech that he gave on the steps of the, I can't remember the name of the building. It's some building full of like creatures and criminals anyway. But after he got elected, he immediately stated that politicians and his staffers and whatnot, were going to go right back in and sign a resolution assigning support for Israel in the conflict that's going on in the Middle East right now, which suggests to me that he's like that, like while he's saying those great things about like the defense of free speech and like online activity and all this other stuff, he goes right back in and contributes efforts directly into the military industrial complex problem.
Made a little post about this.
There you go.
Let's hear him in his own words first.
Extraordinary crisis right now. And the world needs us to be strong. They need us to remember our creed and our admonition. Turmoil and violence have rocked the Middle East and Eastern Europe. We all know it. And tensions continue to build in the Indo-Pacific. The country demands strong leadership of this body, and we must not waver. Our nation's greatest ally in the Middle East is under attack. The first bill that I'm going to bring to this floor in just a little while will be in support of our dear friend Israel, and we're overdue in getting that done. We're going to show not only Israel, but the entire world that the barbarism of Hamas that we have all seen play out on our television screens is wretched and wrong. And we are going to stand for the good in that conflict.
There's no good in that conflict, for God's sakes. And the fact, and like I said, Mike Johnson's first act as Speaker of the House is to spend billions that we don't have on Israel. I think it was McLovin in the chat. He's like, I want to know who the puppet masters are. Well, I think when you have a unanimous Congress that is standing up and applauding Mike Johnson in his first act to fund Israel, I think we're starting to kind of understand a little bit more.
Yeah. And you can go ahead, Mike.
No, Gabe, go.
All right. You can be sure that that announcement that we just watched, that was a condition of him receiving that position to Speaker of the House. They said, all right, it's yours. First thing you're going to do is you're going to go up here and you're going to address Israel. Otherwise, no dice.
Yep. That's precisely what I was going to say, Gabe. So I'm glad, glad you went first. Cause like that's the other thing too, this is something that I've mentioned in multiple different discussions. So like when we look at Hollywood, the reason that Hollywood stories are so gripping is because in order to, like, Hollywood has learned over the decades that in order to make the stories more gripping, we have to make them more real. In order to make them more real, you have to base them on like real things that are happening out there, whether it's Jason Bourne or Lone Survivor or James Bond or like whatever, like The Big Short, take your pick. So like I recommend, if for those that haven't watched House of Cards, go watch House of Cards and particularly pay attention to the relationships that are used to manipulate and steer political decision making. Don't pay attention to the names and the characters. Those are fictional, but the relationships are very, very real. And so, like, when we look at this Mike Johnson guy, and because like the other part of the equation you have to ask is, how did he get elected so quickly and with so much support? Then you have to bring the conversation to corporate lobbying, and specifically, who's going to make all the money from continued military campaigns, whether it's in Syria or it's in Yemen or it's in Iraq or Afghanistan or Israel or Palestine, or guys, and it's probably going to go here too. Don't forget about the not here in the U.S., but well, maybe, but don't forget about the coup d'etat that was kicked off in the Republic of Congo. Like, that's a very, very important region because they're just south of Azerbaijan. I believe it's Azerbaijan. My geography gets a little weird. Africa is not my strong suit.
Yeah, Azerbaijan is up there around Kurdistan and all that fun stuff.
So it's just south of Portugal, right? Like Spain and Portugal, like on the northern horn of Africa. Is that what I'm thinking?
Further east.
Okay. But I'm thinking of northern Africa because there is a hub there specifically for natural gas that feeds natural gas into Europe through one pipeline goes through the boot of Italy and one goes right across the gap between North Africa and Spain. Those are two major pipelines. So like if we're actually going into World War III, like everybody is doom porning about, I would suspect that it's going to just like, we're going to watch I got my camera reversed. We're going to watch the war go from the east side, which is Israel and Ukraine. And it's going to just wash across Africa over across that northern portion. It's just going to be a repeat of the entire geographic like scope of World War II. And so and the reason I bring that up is like, you have to ask these questions as far as like, why did Mike Johnson get so much support? Why? How did he get elected so quickly? How did he get that support so quickly? And where's the money coming from? The money's going to be coming from the MIC.
It's got to be. And the thing is it's just washed, right? It's just washed money. You know, at this point, you know, what are we getting over $120 billion to Ukraine? What is Ukraine doing with it? They're buying weapons from American MIC, right? Like it's coming back in now. You know, they're flush with cash. And what do? They put together super PACs where the giving is kind of loose and all of that stuff translates into election dollars for these guys. I mean, it's so plain to see what, you know, this giant money laundering system is that, you know, I don't know, but this guy, he makes so many statements that are absolutely provably false. And I don't know how much you guys know about Hamas, but Hamas wasn't a creation of Iran. Hamas was a creation of Israel. It's a proven fact. And like, they've talked about this at very high levels. Some of the different councils that are out of Israel, the people who were in extremely high positions talking about how, you know, maybe we gave them too much money, how we've supported them for too long, maybe this was a bad idea. Like you can go out there and find a lot of this. I imagine there's a lot on antiwar.com that Scott Horton's site out there, and trust me, if it's real, it's on Scott Horton's site. So I don't know, this idea that, you know, Hamas has to be defeated. Well, you know, it's just like any other, you know, organization. You know, look at who we're funding. And then, you know, in the years to come, we're going to be fighting them. We did it with, you know, the Shiite and the Sunni in Iraq. We've done it with, you know, the Taliban now. We've done it. We're doing it in Ukraine. We did it with Vietnam. And all of this, you know, all of this is just repeat, repeat, repeat. And you can see the standard operating procedure of every one of these conflicts, and really down to the base of it, what's causing it? Like the debt spiral and the banks that are, you know, coming unglued right now. I mean let's maybe take a look at, you know, what's happening across the board with some major banks. Citigroup is down 14%. Morgan Stanley's down 16%. The Goldman Sachs are down 13%. And Bank of America is down 23%. So as all of this is unfolding, as you know, Binance is crashing, as these guys are extremely down, you know, the eyes of America have to be shifted from what the real concern in, you know, the giant inflation. You know, Mike, you had mentioned before that, you know, the creation of jobs in America isn't in the private sector. It's in the government sector. It's like, yep. what do we have to do to take the eyes off this? Well, let's put some dead babies and dead civilians on TV. Let's pump up the outrage, pump up the fear porn, talk about World War III, China doing these things, America doing these other things, Iran coming into the mix, the entire Middle East in terms of a global war. And let's take all the attention off of the failing fiat finance system and put it somewhere else. And where else do you put it? You put it on something that is more outrageous. Or it at least appears more outrageous than what the banking system is, because it's boring as shit.
Well, and it's also, it's not something that people are going to understand in general. You know, you throw, you know, people, you know, schools getting blown up and hospitals getting burned down and all that stuff and people dying in the streets. Put that all over television, and that's what everybody's going to see, especially when you then have the internal division within our country with, you know, demonstrators and protesters on both sides, you know, and I'll just use the Israel-Palestine instance for an example, but get everybody fired up here, create that additional division so people have, you know, enemies to focus on. Because as long as people are seeing each other as enemies, then they're not going to see the real enemy. That's, you know, the one that's shaking the ant jar out there. But we fall for it every time. And I don't know how to get away from that. I don't know how to wake people up to the point where they're going to finally just recognize that that they're just being lied to blatantly. And it's obvious if you would just do a little bit of research and stop caring about the Kardashians as much and stop, you know, flipping out over everything that you see on TV and on TikTok and just wake up. But at the same time, it does seem that there are more people that are pulling their head out of that. And I don't know when it's going to become significant enough to truly drive change. But I do know that more people are beginning to wake up, I believe, from what I can see. And I do try to, you know, I step out of the echo chambers that I have my attention in as well. And, you know, look at other sources and try to, you know, look at other areas and, you know, refresh the conversation that, you know, the narrative that's going on in my own mind with what's going on out in the world. And, you know, while not everybody is being directed to the truth of Bitcoin yet, people are asking more and more questions, and people are recognizing that, okay, there's something wrong here. You know, there's something wrong with the story of, you know, Israel good, Palestine bad, let's go kill people and let's go die. There's people are asking these questions more and more. And I think that should give us some optimism. I'm feeling more positive about it, but I do believe that, and I don't want to be a downer, man, but I do believe that the road is going to be rougher before it gets smoother. And it's going to take something pretty bad happening for people to finally say, wait a minute. Okay, this is bullshit what's happening right now. I'm not sending my kids over there to die. You know, I'm tired of, you know, not being able to afford to feed my family. And it's like you mentioned earlier, Shane, you know, we've, in our country alone, we've got some people that, you know, that if properly motivated could probably, you know, get the attention of some pretty significant powers if they wanted to. I'm just going to leave it at that. And we don't want it to get there. We don't want that to happen. You know, we are in a race to avoid, you know, that sort of thing happening. I don't want violence, you know, on a mass scale within our country. You know, my family lives here. Your families live here. We don't want that. None of us want that. But I get more concerned that, you know, that we may have to go through a period like that at some point before people realize, okay, we've got to take a look at what the actual problems are here. And it starts by following the money. Who's getting rich and who's getting more powerful right now? And then building in systems of accountability and ultimately defunding their activities. Because as long as war is as profitable as it is, it's going to continue on mass scales. But when we get to the point where it's less profitable, when people are held accountable, and when people actually have the power to influence change in a nonviolent way, that's when we start to see things happen.
Mike, so, Mike, you sent me this in the private chat here. Do you want to hit on that?
Yeah. Actually, like briefly, I wanted to touch on one thing that Shane, I had mentioned to you on a phone call earlier, and I'm going to mention it now because Gabe had just brought up, like, how do you avoid the nonsense? For those of you that are on Twitter, I recommend you use the mute function. It's a very powerful function. I personally have gone through and muted every single religious denomination word that I could think of because I'm tired of seeing like all this like just mob mentality contributing to all this nonsense as far as like who needs to commit like more bloodshed on who. It's a bunch of bullshit. Just cut it out. Like the less people that are like actually participating in the outrage, the more power that gets sucked away from that mob of just like mind share and thought, and like it just like it'll just help with that. But so these two links that I sent to you in the back channel, Shane, this first one that you have showing up is actually a screenshot I took from Instagram of sharing this specific tweet, where because I added the guys, this economic system doesn't work, is that the deposit cost for banks is going up so high to the point of where I think it's contributing to the sell-off that's been happening with the banks in particular, the major ones, because like they like this is the hilarity, and this is how much the fiat system is broken, is that we have to kick up the interest rates to try and like bring down inflation, right? To kill demand, to bring inflation down. But by kicking up the interest rates, it's killing the cost for the banks by taking on deposits, because they have to like pay for that in some manner, right? Because like if they want your money in savings, they have to entice that money away from your actively like your rolling spending account, which is your checking account. So they have to entice that away from you by increasing the savings rate or the interest rate that they're going to pay out on those savings. And so like, and like one of the ways that banks have been avoiding this is they've been funneling a bunch of capital into reverse repo markets and money market funds. But like they're getting caught up into this like cat and mouse game. So that's what this chart was. But the other one that I know you also pulled up, which is just previously to it, is that this is to Gabe's point as far as like people waking up to the situation. So the first picture, if you want to click on it, Shane, is one of my best friends who I've been slowly working on orange pilling. But like, as you guys know, and we've talked about, is like, if you're going to orange pill the people that are closest to you, they're going to be the ones that are less ready. Like they're going to be most reticent to doing it. Right. So you have to, it's very much more of like a catch and release strategy. You kind of have to just like, hey, I have the information. If you want to talk about it, you can come to me.
Plant seeds.
I'm not going to push it up into your face because you're not going to appreciate it. And you're just going to shut down just like a parent scolding a kid. So a friend of mine had sent me these pictures, and as he says in the text, he said, for those that are just listening, one is a chart of the annual change in GDP growth rate, which it's showing 5.9% annual change in 2021. And then the other chart is gross domestic product, which is just GDP. The direct measurement is $23.32 trillion as of 2021. And it has a comparison between Japan and China, which isn't really important for this conversation. But so he says in this text, after sending me these pictures, he says, I know I shouldn't look at these graphs like this, but, and then the next picture that I have is like, so I didn't say this, but I was like, we're going to go down a little bit of a rant here because you need to understand this. So what I said to him was, dude, using GDP as a metric of economic activity is so retarded. And I'm not ranting at you. I'm ranting at the entire system. And I'm not going to quote this entire paragraph because that would be awful for you guys. But the gist of it is that the problem with, and the reason why I'm so mad at US dollar, US centric economists and these LARPs and these morons actually getting paid to share their opinions, both in the public sphere and the private sphere, is that just think about this, guys. We're using the U.S. dollar as a measuring tool. Problem one. Problem two is you're using the U.S. dollar. You're using direct U.S. dollar as far as like U.S. dollar value or the amount of U.S. dollars to measure economic activity for the country, which is where the $23 trillion comes from. We continue to flood those U.S. dollars into this system flippantly, basically whenever we want to support whatever initiative we want. How does that fucking make sense? If you're trying to measure a system and you're flooding the system with the unit of measure that you're using to measure it, how can you get actual relevant, useful data out of that system? You can't. You're completely screwing up the measuring system. It would be like if you had a mercury thermometer in your home, but you kept dripping mercury into the thermometer, right? You would constantly think that the temperature is going up or it's staying hotter the entire time. So what would you do? You would crank up the AC to keep it down, and then you're like, what the fuck? Why is the root, it feels colder, but the temperature's not going down. Why isn't my AC working? It's like, well, because you're increasing the unit of measure, you dipshit. That's why. This entire thing is just a sham, and all these guys like Paul Krugman and flipping Jim Cramer, they don't even understand the system that they're championing. That's probably one of the worst parts. And then you've got the politicians that are being funded by the corporate lobbying system, which is being funded by the fiat system, to just defend the system in general. It's this entire disgusting negative feedback loop.
Yeah, Old Salt says, Jeff Booth agrees with you, Mike. He says, you can't measure a system from within the system.
Oh, yeah. Jeff Booth and I have ranted about this in DMs plenty. It's gross, dude.
Yeah, it's pretty insane. It's insanity. And the thing is it's a masqueraded insanity. It's all for show. When real CPI is, you know, been somewhere around 8% for, you know, the last 115 years, you're sitting here with these money manipulators, these quintillionaires that are, you know, wizarding out, you know, whatever graphs they want and picking and choosing the data points within these graphs. And then, like you said, you know, you're taking the base unit of account and inflating it and still using it as a measurement. Like, that's just absolutely fucking nuts. But because the education system, the indoctrination system in America does what it does very well and is right on par with making just, I don't know, this ridiculous culture that we've ended up with, is like, well, yeah, of course nobody understands it. Of course they turn to quote unquote the experts who are on mainstream media and can prognosticate.
I'm an academic. I know what I'm talking about.
Listen to my industry specific jargon that I've lived in, which is a house of cards to begin with. Like, it's absolutely insane. I think, you know, kind of coming back to the insanity here, we were on the topic of Mike Johnson. One of the things that I find absolutely reprehensible is when guys like this do things like this. And I'll share the screen real quick. I almost had the timing down. Damn it. Rookie. Here we go.
Just to take good care of it. I want to tell all my colleagues here what I told the Republicans in that room last night. I don't believe there are any coincidences in a matter like this. I believe that Scripture, the Bible, is very clear that God is the one that raises up those in authority. He raised up each of you, all of us. And I believe that God has ordained and allowed each one of us to be brought here for this specific moment in this time. This is my belief. I believe that each one of us has a huge responsibility today to use the gifts that God has given us to serve the extraordinary people of this great country, and they deserve it.
Come on, man.
The cringe.
I mean, come on, man.
Gabe, you got some thoughts on this guy? Because I have a lot, and they start with the F word.
Manifest destiny, yeah, guys.
Yeah, I mean, this is bigger than than Fauci saying I am the science, and if you speak against me, you're speaking against. I mean, this guy is saying we're here because God put us here. I mean, you're not the freaking Blues Brothers, man. You're not from God. Okay, I mean, it's like when Will Smith yelled up to the stage, he's like, I want to tell this guy, hey, keep God's name out of your freaking mouth, okay? When you're up here doing what you're doing, and then just go up and smack it out of his mouth if that's what it takes. I think I'm probably going to get us in trouble for that.
Gabe condones violence.
All right.
Open hand.
Figuratively. Just open hand smack.
Like on the Ocho where they slap.
Deserves it anyway. But I mean, it's a bold statement to say the least. It's a bold statement to get up there and to say, yeah, God put us here. And I mean, because there's a big implication there, of course. The implication is, if you don't agree, then you're disagreeing with the almighty creator of the universe, because he put us here. And so since he put us here, obviously we're doing his work. But
well, Gabe, what it sounds like? You guys have seen Kingdom of Heaven, right?
Yeah.
It sounds like God wills it.
No, exactly, Mike. Oh, yeah. Golly. I mean, yeah, God wills this. And the thing is, his first act, we're gonna spend billions on Israel to fight Hamas, which Israel stood up. And hey, all of you who stood up and applauded that line, you are here by the will of God. I don't think God's been in DC for a very long time, first and foremost. No. Right? Like,
hell no.
And having run for office and failed miserably at gaining the support of these reptiles, I can tell you first and foremost, one of the things that has gotten those people there is the submissiveness of their nature. They're not fighters. These guys are the guys that tell anybody and everybody, yes. Yes, I will do whatever the fuck you want me to do. I will take the votes. But yeah, at the end of the day, I need your money, right? So they have to say yes. The reason why all of these guys are there is because of fiat incentive structure, period. Like there is nothing else as low, or I should say this extremely high time preference that these guys have is exactly why they're standing there. This is exactly why he's the Speaker of the House. This came with so many strings attached. And everybody in Congress that agrees that we should be spending billions of dollars on Israel, it just smacks you in the face when you see it. And then you start to hear him say, well, we're here by God's design. We are here by God's plan. And you know what? Maybe they quote unquote are, if you look at it in a bigger picture, but the way he means it, this is the most fallacious, out of control, just pompous type of people I can possibly imagine. It honestly makes me sick, because what are they going to do with those billions and billions of dollars, man? I have been thinking about this for a while. I thought about actually doing a quick show on my, on my other show, Radical, about this. Is, ladies and gents, I don't care where you come down on any of this kind of stuff. I fought through Fallujah. I fought through Najaf house to house. And I mean, some of the biggest battles there were. And, 20 years later, all of that was for nothing. I mean, absolutely nothing. Put aside, I didn't say, and I don't say this lightly, put aside the fact that we lost Marines, we lost sailors, we lost, soldiers. I think we lost a whole team of SEALs. This was extremely costly, just the Battle of Fallujah. Then you add to that the amount of lives we destroyed while we were there, the city that we absolutely destroyed while we were there, the culture that we absolutely destroyed while we were there. And that's the thing, is we, they're what they'll call collateral damage, is just another word for dead kids, dead moms, and dead dads, and dead pets, and destroyed lives. Like this is monstrous. This is absolutely one of the most monstrous ideas, that you think you're going to battle your way into peace, because if you wipe Palestine or Palestinians off the map, then somehow you're going to have peace. No, you're not. Because you're not going to get them all. Secondly, the ones that absolutely survived this and have had their parents, their brothers, their sisters, their aunts and uncles destroyed, boy, you've made them very, very desperate people with vengeance on their mind. So
even if they were to succeed, they would just create a new boogeyman.
Yeah.
Like that's what really matters. Like there's
yeah, you're not only creating a new boogeyman, but you're actually creating people who I think are righteously upset. And I mean, to the point where these people are so righteously upset that rather than stand by and do nothing, they are willing to give their lives in terms of trying to prove a point. And that's dangerous. You want to talk about real danger. You want to talk about fomenting terrorism, fomenting, you know, violence around the world. Yeah, go ahead and continue to do what we've been doing for the last 20 years. I mean, it didn't work in Iraq. It didn't work in Afghanistan. It didn't work in Syria. It hasn't worked in Libya. It hasn't worked in, you know, Yemen. It hasn't worked in the Horn of Africa. It hasn't worked in any of these places. And what are we doing? Another boogeyman. Here we go again. You know, bank system's failing, and we've got money that we have to spend. And if we don't spend it more and faster, the entire system implodes.
So continuing with the outrage and this entire scenario and tying it back into Bitcoin, do we want to talk about Preston Pish's article attacking Elizabeth Warren, which I'm really glad to see that Preston Pish is hopping on the he's not even really hopping on the bandwagon, but attacking Elizabeth Warren has been a particular favorite pastime of mine. I've written a couple articles particularly attacking her positions against Bitcoin and energy consumption. So for those that aren't aware or haven't seen it, Preston Pish wrote an article kind of killing two birds with one stone, where he was attacking Elizabeth Warren's claims that I think it was Hamas is being funded by cryptocurrency, which they always mean Bitcoin, because nobody in politics actually cares about the crypto market other than Bitcoin itself. But then he also particularly attacks the whole kind of like FinCEN ruling, where they're attempting to wrap up cryptocurrency. I'm just going to say Bitcoin transactions into, I believe it was the underneath the was it the Patriot Act or the Bank Secrecy Act with regards to like transactions. They're trying to be able to, I think, mute and censor transactions, or at least gain the capability to really force everybody into KYC and AML like avenues to be able to just see where everybody's money is going and all that other nonsense. But yeah, I don't know if either of you two have read much of it. The particular meat on this leg here is really in the first couple of paragraphs, because the rest of it is arguing like the kind of the Bitcoiner position. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
we'll read the first paragraph here in Preston Pish. It's called "Bitcoin is Anti-Totalitarianism: How to Protect Financial Freedom in an Age of Market Manipulation and Policy Overreach." This was published 9 hours ago on Bitcoin Magazine. We'll put it in the show notes. "In the face of ongoing challenges to our cherished freedoms, it is imperative to critically examine the forces at play that threatens the very fabric of democracy. The ideals of freedom and open markets are at risk of being undermined by influential political forces seeking to impose oppressive order and control in the name of security. This article delves into the pressing need to fix the manipulated markets, protect Bitcoin and its inherent anti-totalitarian qualities, and inform U.S. policymakers that democratic values are what's at stake."
Democratic values are what's at stake.
Yeah. You know, this takes me back to a term that was used several times in that earlier grilling of Mayorkas, where they use the term adverse nation state. And it seems to me that can be open to a lot of interpretation. Who's to say that, a group or individuals, a group of individuals or even an individual could be declared an adverse nation state You know, someone that you know exists otherwise lawfully within the United States. They can pretty much, I mean, the Patriot Act really laid the groundwork for that. You know, you can declare somebody whatever the hell you want to declare them if they outwardly disagree in a public square, and anybody can be declared an adverse nation state. So this isn't just about you know, going after bad guys. It was interesting. I was listening to Cafe Bitcoin the other day, and there was they were talking about how, you know, turning lawful people into criminals, basically. And so therefore, you know, creating the justification, or at least the perceived justification, of taking legal action against them. And it reminded me of a book that I think was written back in 2011 or so, Three Felonies a Day. If you haven't heard of it, check it out. But essentially, I mean, the gist of the book is that your average American, you know, inadvertently, without even knowing, commits three felonies a day. And it's meant to, you know, to really expose the legal system that exists right now, that we are all currently a part of, that, you know, if the need was there, or I should say, if the desire was there, if the motivation was there for the judicial system to press charges against people, it's not as hard as you think that it could be. It's just a matter of identifying, you know, which felonies you're committing, and then, you know, turn otherwise lawful citizens into criminals that can then be prosecuted. And I see a lot of that, you know, it keeps, and again, it keeps coming to my mind because I see a lot of this happening with the approach that they're taking towards cryptocurrency specifically. You know, of course, it's going to be Bitcoin that ends up being targeted as the ultimate prime objective. But, you know, how do you criminalize people that are, you know, that choose to transact in Bitcoin? How do you criminalize people that, you know, are taking steps to remove themselves from the fiat system and exist entirely within the Bitcoin ecosystem? And I believe that this is one of those things. And I believe that they are going to be taking steps to essentially, you know, get to the point where they're shutting down the exits for people to get out of the system and trapping them in there. And I mean, I believe that there will be ways that they will try to, I guess, capture, at least restrict your ability to transact. Well, I mean, it would be very difficult to totally restrict your ability to transact with Bitcoin, but to at least off-ramp your dollars from the system and into Bitcoin. And it concerns me because I think that they're already doing it behind the scenes. You know, and we hear about these banks that are now restricting transactions. Chase in UK, I think we talked about this before, but Chase Bank in UK, you can't buy cryptocurrencies using from that account anymore. If they're doing it out there, okay, why not do it everywhere else? And again, this is just to funnel people into, you know, into the CBDCs, and not really give them the choice and let them know, well, look, this is the same. This is the same as that Bitcoin thing, except this is more stable because the government regulates it. And look how good of a job we're doing with dollars so far, right? So just trust us with this. And the fact is, we have a lot of, there are a lot of people that are in the Bitcoin ecosystem that, that complain, and that, you know, a lot of it, of course, is just, you know, expression, ranting. There's a good deal of justifiable frustration, but we're reaching this point where people are going to have to make a decision to stop complaining and stop whining and stop bitching about this and really stand up and start using their voice to bring this awareness to people that need it. Because we're at that point. And we talked earlier about the, you know, ignoring you. First they ignore you, then they laugh at you. And the next one is then they fight you. And I believe that we're reaching that point where that fight, it's starting right now. It's happening, okay? And whether or not we see it or not, that fight is taking place, okay? And you don't always have to see your attacker for them to attack you and for them to do it effectively. But we're at that point now where that fight has come. And people are going to need to stand up. Okay, and I'm not talking about grabbing your weapons and running out in the streets and doing violent things, but there are many different ways to fight this this debacle and this freaking bastardization of our society that is taking place, that will be completely nonviolent because Bitcoin does the work. But it's a matter of standing up, being solution focused, talking to people and educating them in ways that are going to be productive and engaging in this so we can prevent the violence that none of us want to see happen. And so I think people need to start asking themselves, you know, whether you're ready for the fight to happen or not, it's here. It's here. And people are going to have to react. And that's the place that we have reached now.
Solid, Gabe. Man, Gabe just comes in sometimes and mic drops and just blows the whole thing up. And you're just like, damn. You're right, though. I mean, yeah, this doesn't have to be a contagion of violence, right? Like we're to that point where, you know, there's a lot you can do. And, you know, I've often said, you know, at your local level, you know, there's a lot of what I think we have employed in terms of special operations, especially, you know, the Green Berets mission, right, is force multiplication, where they'll go into an indigenous population, they'll identify a lot of the key players, get into those networks and, you know, use those networks. And one of the things,
making friends.
Yeah. One of those things that you can do, you know, is understand, you know, your local area, your community, your neighborhood, you're a leader there. And if you're already in Bitcoin, if you're already out of the banking system, if you've got damn near every penny you possibly can get in Bitcoin already, that's your calling. You know, you can do it that way. If you're outspoken and you've got some pull behind you, there's possibly running for some small offices like executive, like the sheriff. The sheriff has a tremendous amount of power, and somebody that could propose to their sheriff that they could get paid in Bitcoin instead of taking cuck bucks. You know, you look at the incentive structure, and now you can turn that thing on its head to where they can actually be part of your community again. Healing can begin. The officers can actually be safer. They can begin to decriminalize a lot of the really dumb, you know, laws that are out there. Like Gabe was mentioning, you know, 3 felonies a day. You're absolutely right. Is, you know, if you got a sheriff that says, no, we're not going to do this here. We're not going to, you know, violate people's rights. And if there's no hurt party, then there's no real crime. You know, if you can get, you know, a community going, if you have people that can accept Bitcoin, that can transact on Bitcoin, that can save in Bitcoin during this largest wealth transfer in human history, you've got a real chance to affect change in a peaceful way. And with this network and, you know, what you've got at your disposal in terms of the media portion, the Skillshare portion, the PTSD portion, the training portion that is in the works, you know, that Alex is working on, and not to mention everything else that we're touching. Like, there is a real opportunity. If you're one of those people that wants to change this world for the better, you're going to have to take action. Like Gabe said, you're going to have to get off your ass, get off of Twitter, get off of, you know, all this stuff for a little while and go out into the real world and make it happen. Mike, you got some ideas and closing thoughts here?
I was actually typing up a tweet that I just sent that Gabe inspired a thought for me. It's like the whole point to Bitcoin is to take the violence of a revolution and pull it from the streets and let it get meted out in markets, right? Like, that's where the violence needs to get that fought, as far as like markets between. We can talk about, I can't remember who mentioned it. It might have been Matt or somebody else. Can't see it in the comments right now. But you take the violence from, say, like these zombie stocks and all this other crap that people are being forced into holding through, like, you know, pensions and 401ks and everything. You let the violence of the market get meted out in the sense of that violence causes the Gresham's Law, the good money will flow to wherever it's like treated best. Or maybe I have it backwards. I've been getting a lot of stuff backwards.
Money doesn't wait.
Yeah. So like Bitcoin allows for the money to flow into it because it's going to be treated best there. And then you allow for the incentivization to just drive that even further. It creates its own power vacuum. Instead of having like being forced into some sort of like kinetic revolutionary rebellious situation that history has relied upon in the past, because the money was always physical. Like, cause like another point to Bitcoin is like one of my favorite ones is that it can't, like, if you custody it properly, if you store it properly, it can't be physically removed from your ownership, which means that physical violence, kinetic violence, is less incentivized. Because like, why are you going to waste the blood and resources to commit violence against another if you don't get anything out of it? Like, were you gonna just do it just to do it, just so you can have less at the end of it, and that there's less people to collaborate with to get more resources again? That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So let the rebellion get meted out in the markets versus the streets. That's what I'm gonna say.
Hell yeah, well said.
I love it, man. I think that's a really good place to start wrapping this whole thing up. Ladies and gents, we really appreciate every one of you guys being here. Shout out to everybody in the crowd out there. I see Alex Stanzik out in the crowd. I hope you guys are okay and doing well tonight. There's a bunch of others out there. Scott, Slick, Nick, Bitcoin, Gandalf out there, Lightning, and Winston, and the rest of you guys. Thank you guys for hanging out with us. You know, next time, please don't be strangers. Feel like you can come up and speak and add to the conversation. We do this every Wednesday night at 7 p.m., and we're five strong usually. Alex Stanzik and Jordan couldn't be with us tonight. They'll probably be back next week. Gabe and Mike have been my co-hosts tonight. Mike Hobart and Gabe Lord, follow them all on Twitter. The show notes will be up hopefully by tomorrow morning with the show out there, and we hope you share it. We hope if you find great value in this, if you like the idea of a bunch of veterans getting together, talking economics, talking Bitcoin, looking at the world and having some real understanding of what it is, and putting guys, you know, or I should say taking guys out of a nihilist mindset, you know, the violent mindset, and putting them back on a road to hope and the ideas that we were, you know, taught as kids of individualism, of sovereignty, of peace, of just red, white, and blue American freedom and justice, you know, being the big one for me. If that's what you're into, consider spreading this around. Consider subscribing, following, and helping us spread this word. It's what we need more than anything. It doesn't cost you anything, maybe a little bit of time. And if you want to be involved, DM us, and we'll get you into the Bitcoin Veterans chat groups. And there you're going to find a bunch of guys that are getting stuff done that are just nonstop 24/7. But for everybody out there that's joined us, thank you very much. Mike, Gabe, thanks again, guys. I really appreciate you guys doing this. Jordan and Alex, we hope you guys are good. And we'll see everybody next week here on Bitcoin Veterans. Don't shitcoin. It's bad for your health. And shameless plug, myself and Alex both work for Swan. So if you are new to Bitcoin and you need help and you are looking at this as a FOMO event, please reach out to us. We'd be happy to help you, happy to help you secure not only your savings, but retirement, trust, your business, whatever it is. So at the end of the day, we'll see you later. Thanks very much, everybody. Peace.